Happy Friday, people. I am Jake Mintz.
And I'm Jordan Schusterman. On this edition of Baseball Barbercast, we are talking about the recently released spring breakout rosters, the prospect all-star games of sorts that are happening in spring training over the next week. Brian Bello signed an extension, and we are going to talk some fantasy baseball with Dalton Del Don of Yahoo Fantasy, as well as Jazz Chisholm, who is done eating McDonald's. All that and more on this episode of Baseball Barbercast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbercast, the only baseball podcast in the world with a Yankees fan as its producer. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And later on today, we will introduce Mr. Andrew Hartz, our new producer. Finally, a perspective on a podcast from a Yankees fan.
Oh, we are making history. It's about time this underrepresented community finally gets a voice. And we have gone out of our way to find one to make sure that that tiny fan base that has suffered for so long will finally have their perspective shared on a platform like this.
Finally, Jordan, someone will be talking Yanks.
It's about time. On this Friday edition of Baseball Barbercast, we are going to talk about the spring breakout rosters that were just released, the minor league prospect showcase games that will be going on in spring training about a week from now, I guess a little bit less than a week from now. We're going to talk about an extension given out to Red Sox right-hander Brian Bello. The Red Sox and Rays, a couple games planned in the Dominican Republic coming up this weekend. So we're excited about that. And then we're going to have a special guest on in the second half of the show. We're going to be doing a little bit of fantasy baseball chatter with Dalton Del Don of Yahoo Sports, of course, Yahoo Sports fantasy team. So that's going to be a fun conversation. We recorded that yesterday, just kind of looking at some of the players we are especially high and low on coming into this season. I think even if you don't like fantasy baseball, you will definitely enjoy that conversation. And then we are going to talk about Jazz Chisholm reportedly eating McDonald's every day before introducing our producer, Andrew Hartz. But Jake, we must begin back in spring training, back with on the backfields, although no longer on the backfields, because these games will, I believe, all be televised, which makes me feel very good, because this was something I was worried about when this event was first announced. But it does seem like all of these spring breakout games between each organization's top prospects is going to be televised. And that's
so you can watch as many games with the A's prospects as the A's.
Yes, exactly. that's a great point. Yeah. Now, I don't know if the A's specifically are televising that one. Again, that's a reference to the fact that we believe the A's are only televising one spring training game this spring, from what I can tell. But yeah, all these games are going to be on. This is from, I believe, March 14th to March 17th. There's going to be a bunch of games. A couple teams are actually playing two of these games. But we got the rosters for these games released. And it was really an interesting exercise, I think, because while this is one game, or I guess in most cases two, for the most part, yeah, it's the team's top prospects. It's the guys you've heard of. But I'm also pretty interested in the guys that you maybe haven't seen that are going to get to play in this game, because this is, to me, an indication that the organizations are telling the league and are telling their fans, these are players you should care about. Now, again, we're not going to start with the more niche guys, but I think that is also an interesting element to these games.
Yeah, usually, right, we very rarely get a public sign of how teams value their own players. Okay, we get that in arbitration numbers, we get that in trades, and we get it with prospects basically once a year when it comes to like 40-man roster stuff, right?
Yes.
That is the easiest way to understand how teams view their own prospects. If there's a guy who a team does not put on the 40-man roster, they don't think that they're ready to be a big leaguer right now, right?
Or soon. However, or even soon, right? Because you know, you have the option years and whatnot. Yeah.
Right. Now, there's an indication here with the players that are playing in spring breakout of who the team's like. Now, obviously, there's some noise involved. And I'm skeptical that there's like active misdirection. I don't think, you know, the Brewers are sending guys they think actually suck, so that, you know, teams don't know who's good.
So it's funny you say that. And again, this is not necessarily the direction I wanted to go with this, but I was thinking about that, because in the old days, and even 10, 15 years ago, we still have some of this now where it's like, oh, if a team thinks they have something special, you know, maybe a hard throwing Dominican pitcher who's only pitching the DSL, like they will try to hide guys for as long as possible in terms of just like what they think they have. Now that happens more on the amateur side, right? It's like, if you want to draft someone or sign someone, you don't want people to find out. Now, sometimes you have the reverse thing where it's like, let's get this guy on TV. Let's get his trade value up. You know, like there's versions of that that can kind of function in the opposite direction. But most importantly, let's talk about why this is fun. I mean, we love the futures game. That is an example of only, you know, players who are part of, you know, in theory of the future. We get to look at futures game rosters from 5 years ago and be like, oh yeah, nope, there were, you know, 15 all-stars in that game, and here's what they were all playing against each other when they were 21. That's pretty cool. But for organizations to show a little bit more depth of their organization, or I guess in some cases lack thereof, I would say is a very interesting example. So again, there's so many to choose from. I believe Pipeline tweeted out, so you know, MLB Pipeline does their top 30 prospect list, and they released those earlier this week. And so there are 900 ranked prospects on MLB.com, and I believe almost 600 of them are on the Spring Breakout rosters, right? So this is a lot of players who, in theory, are going to be relevant in our Major League fandom over the next few years. But are there any teams or guys that stand out that you're excited to see?
I just want to actually pull back for a second about why this event is cool. There are really two other threads that I think are worth mentioning. One is that we very rarely get to see top prospects on good quality broadcasts, right? Minor league broadcasts are better than they used to be, but there's still a notable quality difference when you're watching something from high A, whether it's the number of camera angles or the broadcaster or the crispness of the camera. All of those things make those highlights that we get less likely to reach more people. And when you compare that, and I know this is an extreme example, but like I think about when like Victor Wembanyama and Scoot Henderson played one another in the States, like two of the top NBA draft prospects from last year, that was like a real broadcast with real cameras. And so all those highlights felt really real. And like all the highlights we had of Wembanyama were like on French TV were like pretty good. And so having high level video, which is more common now, is important. So having like crisp, professional grade quality footage of Paul Skenes facing Jackson Holliday is incredibly valuable to continuing to build up interest in prospect world.
Yeah. And let me add to that, especially with the example you just gave. Of course, we already talked about like, we did have Skenes and Holliday and we were stuck with Jim Callis's phone camera from behind the net, right? So that happened last week, right? So, but combining with the fact that we've talked about what do we like about spring training, it is watching these prospects. And a lot of these guys are already in minor league camp. We already have highlights of Jackson Holliday and Skenes and some of these other guys. But it's that those are so random, and it's at the will of the major league. It's at the kind of the whims of when the major league teams want to play them. Oftentimes, you know, I've been experiencing this with the Mariners a lot this spring. I want to watch Cole Young. You know, I want to watch Johnny Farmelo, some of these high schoolers that I just picked. And they've been getting into games, but it's been totally random. It's the sixth inning. I'm not – like, it's in this case, it's like these guys will be batting, you know, second, third, and fourth and whatnot. And they will be playing in this whole game. I mean, I'm sure they're going to try and rotate and get these guys in. But it is just that, you know, you can pull up these lineups and say, oh, wow, like I get to watch all these guys. Whereas for the most part, our consumption of prospect video, to your point, is very fragmented and very random, especially in the spring. And you just hope that you get a highlight when a prospect comes into the sixth inning and that game happens to be televised.
Yeah. And then the other thing I think is cool is it's the best players against the best players. When you have someone's full season minor league stats. OK, so let's just use Jackson Churio is an example. Jackson Churio is more talented than double-A pitchers. However, when he reaches the big leagues this year and he starts the season on opening day, right, with the Brewers, chances are he's going to, every pitcher he sees in the big leagues is going to be better than like every pitcher he's ever seen. Okay. And so these top hitters and top pitchers are so rarely facing elite players on the other side of the ball. And so to have Skenes against Holliday, to use that example again, Skenes has never faced many guys like Holliday. Holliday has never faced many guys like Skenes. How does a hitter react to seeing that type of pitch mix? Like, you can't derive all that information from more mediocre competition. Now, however, also like the small sample size component of it.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
If Skeens blows Holiday's doors off, it doesn't mean he can't handle velo, right?
Right.
But
right,
it is
right.
An interesting data point.
Yeah, yeah. And to that point, too, that's the other thing I'm really excited about this with these rosters. Again, a lot of the prospects we already have in big league spring training, besides the, you know, the super freaks like Ethan Salas and Holiday or Churia, whatever, who are really young. But like, you're going to have a lot of teenagers playing in these games facing some of the best pitchers that they've ever seen in their life. And like, that is like the fact that Leo DeVries, who just signed with the Padres, you know, a couple months ago and is, I think, barely 17, that he's going to be, you know, on this Padres roster. Sebastian Walcott, a guy with the Rangers, you know, that he's on the Rangers roster, that he's, you know, going to come in. I'm not sure who the Rangers are playing. I guess the Rangers are playing, let's see, they're playing the Reds.
Like the Reds. Right?
So like if Sebastian Walcott has to come in and face Rhett Lauder, that is going to be far and away the best pitcher that he's ever seen in his life. And if he homers, it's like, holy crap, this guy's special. And you're in, even with the small sample, when you have this many games going on at the same time, we are going to get some very special highlights. And I think that is what is really exciting. The other thing I would point out, and this is something that I remember experiencing very vividly when we went to the College World Series, but this is also why it's so important to, you know, be at the ballpark and go to minor league games, is the physicality for some of these players. Now, this is something that is also especially true in person, but I think that if you're lining up all the top prospects on the same team and in the same lineup and in the same defensive, you know, in the same outfield or whatever, you start to understand like, oh my God, that guy is enormous, or the opposite. And sometimes that's even more impressive, right? It's very possible that when you turn on the Mets game and you're like, oh my God, Jet Williams is tiny. That makes me appreciate him so much more because he looks like the smallest player on the field and he also looks like the best player on the field. And so all of those dynamics are another part of what I think is going to make these few games so much fun.
Jordan, who are a couple specific players that you're interested in seeing?
Yeah, so I just mentioned a couple in terms of like the really young guys, and yes, we are going to see Ethan Salas with San Diego, and we've already seen him, you know, race to Double A, so that one doesn't really necessarily jump out as much. I gotta say, like, when we talk about an all-star game setting, which is essentially what this is, my inclination is to go to the pitchers, you know, because the batters, especially with assuming we're going to want to see guys, you know, get circle through. I'm sure not every guy, maybe some guys will get three or four plate appearances, but I imagine they're going to be bringing in some subs. But that one inning look can be super fun. I mean, what Jacob Mizorowski showed us at the Futures game last year was single-handedly like, oh my gosh, like we are all going to know who that is. But I mentioned Rhett Lauder, especially since he didn't throw a pro pitch after getting drafted last year. Super excited to see him. Chase Dolander, another one from last year. Even with the Rockies, I'm excited to see just what his stuff looks like, I would say. But yeah, there are a lot of pitchers. And then I would say the two Marlins pitchers as well, Noble Meyer and Thomas White, the two high school arms that they took last year for a combined like $9 million. I would say both of those guys pitching could be really exciting. So pitching is what I'm thinking about, I think. And I'm sure Pitching Ninja is gearing up for these games.
Get the servers ready. I would say the one hitter I'm most intrigued by is Drew Jones. So Drew Jones, the son of Andrew Jones.
Wait, what?
Yeah, dude.
Okay, that's crazy.
You know what would have been funny? You know what would have been really funny? So Andrew Jones, right? A-N-D-R-U-W Jones. His son, predictably, D-R-U-W Jones. If he had named his kid D-R-E-W Jones, that would have been right. Actually a really nice zag.
Agreed. Minor quick 10-second tangent. Jace Young homering yesterday in spring training and all the highlights saying Jace Young and then in parentheses, Josh's brother. I'm like, okay, listen, if there was another baseball player named Jace Young, this spelling, this name, this build, this look that was not Josh's brother,
that
would be bigger news. That would be, I would actually be more inclined to clarify that than that he is his brother.
Let's ride this tangent wave. So I agree with you. And I think that it's like when Yadi Molina came up, we didn't need to say, oh, you know, he's related to the two other big league catchers from Puerto Rico named Molina. However, James McCann not being related to Brian McCann really threw me. And I thought they were brothers for a long time. Okay.
Yeah, that's now, fair. No, there are some instances. They don't. There are some misses. That's true. But anyway, I just saw that yesterday and I was thinking about it. Okay, anyway, so Drew Jones, why are you interested to watch him play baseball?
So let's rewind to the 2022 MLB draft, where the Baltimore Orioles, the first pick, and they were really choosing between three options: Jackson Holliday, Drew Jones, and Tamar Johnson, a second base prospect with the Pirates, who will be in spring breakout, who's kind of on a very good, normal, non-Jackson Holliday outrageous trajectory. Is that fair?
But he's we talked about him recently. Hasn't disappointed. He's been really good. You know. Yeah.
Yeah. Jackson Holliday, obviously, in retrospect, is the correct pick. I, at the time, really wanted the Orioles to take Drew Jones. And that looks kind of goofy in retrospect, not just because Jackson Holliday is going to get 400 plate appearances in the major leagues this season, less than 2 years after he was drafted. But Drew Jones has been, let's be kind, somewhat of a project more than people expected, particularly on the offensive side of the ball. In center field, he's a elite, incredible defensive player. At the plate, his swing mechanics have just been a lot choppier and more of a project than I think people anticipated.
Yeah.
So to see him,
He's been injured a lot. And so
he's been injured a lot, but that hasn't
weird.
Yeah, but that hasn't helped things. Like, this was a guy who needed a lot of reps against top level pitching. He hasn't gotten them due to injuries. And so he's, in a way, he's slightly behind schedule, I would say. And that Holliday was drafted directly in front of him and is so far ahead of schedule kind of puts added pressure on Jones. And so I'm very interested to see him against top competition, against real legit stuff, to see how he handles it.
Yes, yes. D-backs are playing the Rockies. So there you go. Like, if he you know, climbs in against Chase Dolander, like, that's going to be it's going to be a little bit different. Looking forward to that. Again, we could be rattling off names all day, but we are excited for these games, and we will certainly be reacting to them as I know we'll be starting our division previews next week, but we'll definitely be hitting them as these highlights come about.
The one other thing I want to say is the Padres pitchers. Specifically, I'm excited about. So that, the Padres farm system is so funny, right? It's like they trade everyone away for someone, and then you look the next season, and it's like still good. You know, AJ Preller, for all of his faults, knows how to scout. And so the Padres have five arms. They have five arms that, like, I'm actively excited about: Robbie Snelling, Dylan Lesko, Drew Thorpe, who they got in the Soto deal, Jairo Iriarte. My apologies. And Adam Mazur. Those five guys can all really chuck the pill. I'm excited to see them on TV. All right, Jordan, let's move on from spring breakout to a big league pitcher who has Brian Bello broken out. Would you say that he's broken out, or he's still fixed? He's still together.
This is that's a good question. I think, like, for people, it's weird for someone like this to, I feel like, be kind of under the radar. And I know Red Sox fans are screaming, like, how do you not know about Brian Bello? I mean, he debuted in 2022 and looked pretty good. And then he made 28 starts in the big leagues, but the Red Sox were just not a very relevant baseball team in 2023. And as far as we know, do not project to be especially relevant in 2024 either. However, this is something they will absolutely have to look forward to. We're going to talk a little bit later with Dalton about our optimism about Tristan Casas in terms of an anchor in the Red Sox lineup. I think in terms of an anchor in the Red Sox rotation, we know the recent news with Lucas Giolito going down, their big offseason acquisition, questions about the rotation. Now, this was an extension. It's not like this is a reaction to that. But it is kind of a reminder that, you know, pitching is fragile. It's a reminder that deals like this for pre-arb pitchers are extremely rare. And you might say, well, what do you mean? We've had more of those recently. Yeah, that's a recent thing. You know, Hunter Green signing one of these, a very similar deal. Spencer Strider getting one. You don't see
Sandy
that very
Alcantara.
Often. Yep, Sandy Alcantara. And it's not as much as, of course, you would get in the open market, but it is the kind of security that young pitchers certainly crave. And for Bello to get 6 years, $55 million guaranteed, buys out one free agent year. There is a team option for at least one more. But he's a really, really interesting pitcher. I mean, we can get into kind of his profile here, but it's pretty straightforward. I think he's really good. Has he broken out yet? Is there another gear to get to? I would say yes. I mean, not that he wasn't good last year, but the main thing that hasn't translated from his minor league numbers to the big leagues is strikeouts. And I would say the simplest version of that is that he doesn't really have a breaking ball, that is particularly effective at the major league level. He throws two different fastballs and he has an excellent changeup that is fantastic for grounders and weak contact, but we haven't really seen him develop, whether it's a slider, you know, curveball, that is getting enough whiffs. The changeup's awesome. Now, it doesn't matter. He doesn't have to be striking out 12 guys per nine to be really good, but that's kind of the next gear that he could get to. And I'm not familiar if he is working on something like that. He might be good enough to just do it like this, but that's the one next step, I think, for him.
Yeah, I have confidence there's more in the tank here. His raw stuff is super good. He's really athletic. I like the way the ball comes out of his hand. And then the Red Sox addition of Andrew Bailey as their pitching coach and Craig Breslow, for as uninspiring a job he has done at, you know, building the roster this offseason, he is known for being very skilled at pitching development. And yes. So I trust Breslow and Bailey to get the most out of Bayo based upon the natural talent that he has. And I think this contract is kind of a bet on that. Even if he is an average, slightly above average pitcher that he was last year, for the next six seasons, there's still good value in that.
Oh, yeah.
But I think the Red Sox think they could squeeze more juice out of the lemon.
Yeah,
more lemon out of the juice.
I totally agree. No, I'm in on this guy. He does, I think, deserve a little bit more love. He was never really, you know, near top of prospect list. He signed a little bit late, but pretty much always been good. He was good right away in the minors, and he's carried that over to the big leagues. So again, Red Sox fans, we're looking for things to be positive about. This is something to be positive about.
My favorite thing about this is Red Sox fans and Rafi Devers being like, spend money on pitching. And the Red Sox are like, okay. And then everyone's like, well, no, not like that.
Well, yes, like that, but then also do something
like
else.
Like that, and also Jordan Montgomery, please, now.
One more, as semi-related to Brian Bayo, I know Red Sox fans are excited about him, you know, kind of being locked in there as one of the key parts of their rotation for the foreseeable future. The Red Sox are going to Santo Domingo this weekend. They will be playing the Rays in a couple of spring training exhibition games. We've seen a couple games like this before. I believe Minnesota was down there and played. I can't remember who they played against. But we've seen some games in the DR recently, last few years. But this is, of course, a country and a stadium in particular at Quisqueya in Santo Domingo that we've both spent some time at. You, of course, more than me. That it is just very cool that we have these exhibitions. And I know they kind of get lost in the shuffle, especially when they're exhibition games and not necessarily, you know, the real regular season games like that we're going to have in Seoul in a few weeks. But this environment will be awesome. And the Red Sox are so important to Dominican baseball culture. And I'm sure that will be very much on display this weekend.
Oh, yeah, it'll be really cool. When I was at the Manfred press conference in Florida, someone asked about this game, and Manfred talked about how why there isn't a regular season game in the Dominican is because the facilities at that stadium are not up to MLB standards. But Manfred has said he's meeting with the president, not of like the Dominican Baseball Federation, like the president of the Dominican Republic. When he's down there for these games, to try and find a way to kind of upgrade Quisqueya, the national stadium in Santo Domingo. Now, yeah. I would say, having spent an outrageous amount of time in that stadium, I think it is actually, now that I think about it, Jordan, I think it's the stadium I've been to the third most games at, which is kind of wild.
Yeah,
behind Yankee Stadium and Citi Field. Maybe Philly is close.
No, I mean, you were down there for long enough, and I imagine you went to probably at least 15 to 20 games. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was a lot. I think Manfred is probably right.
But it seems, it's like, I agree, but at the same time, when you see that they've been able to just, I know there's a difference between upgrading and essentially making go poof out of nowhere, which we've seen MLB pop stadiums up, you know, in all these random places, whether it's the Field of Dreams, whether it's like, you know, Fort Bragg, whether it's like even upgrades they did to the Little League Park, you know, in Williamsport. Like, this should be doable. I know it's should more complicated be. in another stadium or in another country, right? I understand that. This should happen.
Dog, you're
and
so
probably
right.
will happen.
Yeah, I'm going to take back what I said. You make a great point, which is like, they played a game in the corn. Like, they played a game in the corn. They played in the corn, and we should
most
therefore
of what
be
is
able-
there in Quisqueya is functional, right? And by the way, especially that stadium. I mean, the issues with the other stadiums in, you know, Lee Dome and DR is that the field quality is like catastrophically bad and like borderline dangerous. You know, what's going on in San Pedro? Like, we saw some of the stuff going on. But again, that would not be the issue. This is the best stadium in the country. That there should be a way to do that. If they're willing to play spring training games there, it's not, also travel wise, it's not that absurd. Like, listen, I know it's not that simple, but I think there's so much reason to want to make it work there that I think that they will.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's take a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to chat with Dalton Del Don about some fantasy baseball.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. We are now very excited to be joined by a special guest, a member of the Yahoo Fantasy World, the team, Dalton Del Don. Dalton, welcome to Baseball Barbacast, your Barbacast debut. I hope you're not too nervous.
I don't know how special I am, but thanks for having me, guys. Always love talking some baseball. And happy you guys joined in the Yahoo family, man. Appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, no, it's been a pretty wild few weeks, but obviously with the season fast approaching, we are going to be previewing the season in many ways leading up to opening day, and this is going to be one of them. We did want to do a little bit of fantasy chatter today, but we also thought that this is always a good avenue also to just talk about players we like, right? And that's kind of the premise of what Jake and I like doing all the time. And so we figured we would bring you on to kind of talk about some of the players for this upcoming season that you particularly like, of course, in a fantasy context, which is what you're focused on, but also, you know, just in general, and that maybe you feel like you're higher on than the consensus here.
Now, I have not played, admittedly, fantasy baseball in a long time. Jordan still plays. And I think it would be helpful, like, just to start for our listeners who maybe don't play a lot. When we talk about like value, right, of what makes a player valuable or good in an MLB winning on the field context versus a fantasy context, I imagine that that's an overlap like 88% of the time, 92% of the time. Where are the particular areas in fantasy baseball that make a player more valuable or less valuable than their output on the field?
Steals would be the easy answer for sure. I mean, of course, they add some value to the real life player, but in fantasy, head-to-head's different. You can punt that. But if you're playing rotisserie, it's a category you need to attack, and it's becoming increasingly important because it's going up throughout the league. So steals is the easy one. You know, Ruiz on the A's is going to go in the top 10 rounds. And in real life, you know, not quite. You can't even play defense, I don't believe. So, and then the counter to that is defense. You know, defense does not matter in fantasy baseball, only when it comes to playing time. Like maybe a Brenton Doyle in the Rockies, horrible real life hitter last year, but very good at defense, and actually get some fantasy categories too. So that can kind of meld a little bit there. But steals is the obvious answer here. Everyone's going after steals in fantasy baseball, and in real life, you know, that's not one of the first things you're going to look at to add to a war.
Yeah. Which is fine, though. And like, to me, I think, again, when you broaden conversations like this outwards, and we're going to talk about some of these players in particular, which I'm sure the speed component is a big part of it, is those players are usually pretty exciting. And even if they are flawed major league players or really good overall, incredible major league players like the Bobby Witt Juniors and the Julios of the world, it also adds an element of like, okay, that guy is different and that guy is interesting. And Ester Ruiz absolutely fits that. But it also allows you to spotlight someone like CJ Abrams, you know, who coming into the season, I just could not be more excited about because he does have the power speed combination. But it's also, because of that, people should be paying attention to him if you don't play fantasy baseball. And so I think that that is an area where I think is worthwhile. But we did want to hit on a couple guys in particular. And before we hit on the Ellie and O'Neill, who, of course, it kind of embody the power speed combination, there were two other players we wanted to hit on because compared to, you know, of course, there's a team of Yahoo experts that you guys put together the fantasy baseball rankings. And there are a couple players that stand out to us as young ascended players that I think in a major league context, people are very excited about across the board. In a fantasy context, a little bit less. So let's start with Tristan Casas. This is someone who I believe you are a lot higher on than your compatriots in the Yahoo baseball world. Tell me about your excitement for Tristan Casas, because I know I certainly share it.
Yeah, I mean, Cassis hit 317 after the All-Star break last season, when he also ranked top five in WRC plus and OPS and other redundant counties stats like that. I mean, just awesome in the second half. His StatCast numbers for the whole season just feature a ton of red. He's going to benefit hitting. Now, here we get into the fantasy part. He's going to benefit hitting in the middle of Boston's lineup, and in that, and Fenway is baseball's best park for left-handed batters. He's just going to go much higher in 2025 fantasy drafts. He doesn't get you the steals we talked about, but this one just seems so obvious to me. He's like my number one breakout candidate and still available deeper into drafts. He's going to go, like I said, way higher next year. I can guarantee it.
And the other thing with him, I think that's important, is if he struggles, the Red Sox are going to continue to play him, because the best version of the Red Sox in 2024 and 2025 and beyond needs Tristan Cassis to be good. And so there's a long leash there. Whereas, like, you know, I think it's understandable to see Cassis and have like Bobby Dalbec trauma in a way. But Cassis, the consensus is he is a level more talented and dependable and has accomplished more than what Dalbec did at a similar point in his career.
Yeah. The thing I'd add about him is, and I just saw he's a, first of all, very interesting personality and someone I'm excited for just the baseball world to get to know more. But when you talk about the statistics, and this is where the fantasy component comes in, but when he talks about hitting and what his goals are, he throws out things like, I want to hit 300, 400, 500, right? He's talked about how much Joey Votto is someone he's completely modeled his game after. And in terms of an overall offensive approach, this is something where, oh, this is a complete hitter. And that's just been true since he was in high school, right? And now he was much more celebrated coming out of high school, you know, than Votto was 20 years ago. But you can see that that is the offensive profile that is starting to form. And I agree. I think that, listen, there's a lot of reasons to be concerned about the direction of the Red Sox and how much fun they're going to be having this year. Tristan Cassis should be the least of your worries, because I think he is going to be fantastic. So I think we are totally on board with that. And I agree. It's almost like, it feels like some players just develop, kind of get stuck with the stink of the organization. And I feel like that sometimes even applies in a fantasy context, even if logically it's like, what the hell? This guy was one of the best hitters in baseball, you know, in the second half. And why wouldn't you want to pick him? So I love that pick. One guy, though, that I know you're a little bit lower on, and this is where, again, the fantasy versus real life value might kind of diverge, is George Kirby. This is someone who, as far as a, you know, a Cy Young breakout, you know, sleeper context, people are, you know, blowing the sky up. Oh my God, he's the best strike thrower in baseball, and he's part of this amazing Mariners pitching staff. Where do you kind of see George Kirby, and why are you less enthused about him, at least in fantasy context?
So fantasy managers love him. They're drafting him as a top 10 fantasy starter ahead of my guy, Tyler Glasnow. Some people even have the temerity to do that. Listen, Kirby was great last year. There's no question about it. But ERA just can fluctuate so much. And I just worry that a guy that misses so few bats, he could have some problems here if this walk rate does regress some. Kirby's 2.5% walk rate last season was the best by a starter in 10 years, since 2014. So that's going to be tough to sustain. Again, drafted as a top 10 fantasy starter, despite ranking 29th in CSW and 30th in K percentage. So projections have him as a low 8 K guy, ERA in the high 3s. It would not surprise me if Kirby finishes like the third or fourth best starter in Seattle. I mean, Jordan, you just wrote about Bryce Miller. What if that cutter gets lefties out and neutralizes them? I think guys like Miller have more fantasy upside than Kirby, who goes way, way early. Drafting him as a top 10 starter is just based off last year's results in the ERA department. And I worry that that can fluctuate so much year to year.
And I would imagine Kirby's ERA number, right, that's going to be a lot more dependent on Seattle's defense. Mm-hmm. Jordan, do you think that's taken a step back or a step forward with all the turnover they've had on the offensive side?
That's an interesting question. I would say it's probably, man, third base is a pretty big question mark right now. And Polanco, again, they're trusting a lot in Perry Hill to, you know, sprinkle his infield defense pixie dust on Jorge Polanco and the guys who are going to be playing at third base. I agree that the defense is a bigger component. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because the one thing I would push back on from you, Dalton, is this is who George Kirby is from a strike throwing standpoint. This dude walked like three people in college. If anybody is going to sustain this absurd level of control, it is him. But I think your point about the missing bats is where, again, if we kind of broaden this out to like a Cy Young conversation, I do think that the ERA is going to kind of be fluctuating because he is leaving more up to contact. At the same time, when you see his ability to adjust, his ability to add pitches on the fly, whether it's a splitter, whether it's a knuckleball, whether it's something else, like I could see him finding ways to get more whiffs. But I totally understand that he is probably overrated as long as the strikeouts are more of a, you know, nine Ks per nine versus a 10 or 11 or a 12, like you're seeing with guys like Glasnow or even Bryce Miller that we'll see. So I totally with you on that. But I do not expect regression from a command standpoint. I mean, maybe he doesn't have a historic season in terms of throwing strikes, but I do think George Kirby is going to continue to be the best strike thrower in baseball. So that's a good one.
Totally fair. And a great point about the defense. Sorry, just great point about the defense. It's going to matter more to him than these guys who miss bats. But you may be right. Maybe he just only regresses a minor. But he's a very good pitcher. I just think a little bit overvalued in fantasy this year.
Totally fair. Totally fair. All right, let's get to some real hot takes here, because the volatility with these next two guys is part of what makes them so fun, so terrifying, so exciting, and two of the most fun players in baseball. Ellie De La Cruz and O'Neill Cruz, who, fair or not, have been compared a lot. If their name was not both Cruz, would we still be making these comparisons? The answer is yes, because there are only so many 6'6", 6'7", you know, shortstops who can throw the ball 150 miles an hour and hit the ball 150 miles an hour. That is what both of these guys are, and now they both exist in the NL Central. I saw a ton of Ellie De La Cruz up close and personal last year, since the Reds are my closest ballpark. I was there at his debut. I was at some of his wildest games. Like, I know what it looks like. I understand the pros and the cons. Obviously, from a fantasy context, I'm sure you're focused on the power speed combinations, but it seems like you are optimistic on both of these, that they can hit enough to be, you know, worthwhile players.
Yeah, I get it. De La Cruz is this year's most polarizing fantasy player. His range of outcomes literally includes 20 homers, 50 steals to being demoted to the minors. I mean, there is still talk of that, and the Reds are absolutely loaded with young talent. And this is a player that had a 62 WRC plus in the second half last year. But he also hit 13 homers and swiped 35 bags in fewer than 100 games as a 21-year-old while doing that in the second half. So, I mean, the upside's through the roof. He's recorded MLB's top sprint speed, the hardest recorded infield throw in StatCast history, the third hardest hit ball as a rookie. And he plays in Great American Ballpark, which is just the best hitter's park in baseball, at least for home runs. It's better than Coors Field. And he somehow performed worse at home there last year compared to on the road. He had a 60 WRC plus in Cincinnati last year. That's going to regress. I don't know what to make of his swinging. He really adjusted at the plate last year, basically swung the least amount of any hitter in baseball in September. But I think he's going to make adjustments to the 21-year-old with this freakish athletic talent and a fantasy. It's just a goldmine with the steal and homer combination. So, yes, there's a risk, but I'm willing to take it. He can play defense. That's why I think part of the problem, it'll help him not be demoted. Not only is he the face of the franchise, but guy can play defense. So I think that helps him as well.
Yeah, Jake, I'm curious where you're at on both of these guys. I know O'Neill Cruz, and to be fair, you know, I throw him in as a power speed guy because he's freaky fast because his strides are absurd. But you know, he never sold more than 20 bags in the minor leagues. I think with O'Neill, it's more of a, you're buying the power upside. And if he actually stays healthy for a whole season, you could, even looking at his minor league numbers, you say, okay, really? He's going to hit 30 home runs? Like, yeah, I do think he could absolutely do that. And if he's a shortstop, that's super valuable. But Jake, where are you at in terms of, we're going to talk about these guys a ton more leading up to the season, I'm sure. But where are you at in terms of projecting these two?
Yeah, I'm a little more skeptical about O'Neill's defense. And the idea that it's so complicated. Okay, so like O'Neill's defense is worse, right? But like O'Neill is more guaranteed to play regularly because the Pirates are more reliant on him from a roster building perspective. However, it's like, okay, do you trust O'Neill's approach to improve or Ellie's approach to improve more? Because O'Neill just missed like a whole season of games. However, he's older, he has more experience. That would make you want to trust him a little bit more. I think as a whole, I lean towards Ellie. And I think that is a flawed perspective, even as I just said it, because I think we're underrating O'Neill a little bit. And that if Ellie didn't exist, we as an industry on the fantasy side and not would be gung-ho over O'Neill. Ellie has warped our brains. O'Neill was unlike anything we'd ever seen, And then Ellie showed up
the next year. And so that's not really fair. The last thing I want to say about these two guys before we move to some other guys that, you know, farther down the rankings that we find interesting is to your point about Ellie stealing 35 bases in 98 games. And this is, I think, again, the stolen base component as steals are going up across the league. You still have to want to go. Yes, steals are easier than they have before, but you got to have that, you know, oh, I'm going every time. You got to have that green light. And we saw it in all kinds of ridiculous situations with Ellie, you know, stealing all three bases and on four pitches in Milwaukee. Like, he wants to go in the same way that Acuna wants to go, right? Like, Acuna is not one of the fastest players in baseball anymore, but it doesn't matter because he is perfected, you know, what it means to be a base stealer in a lot of respects and has that aggression. So I think that is also a key with Ellie, that if he's playing, even if that batting average isn't pretty, even if he's figuring out the approach, he's going to be running a ton. And so I think, I'm sure, in a fantasy context, and again, as I just a fan of watching him, that is ridiculously fun. So any last thoughts on the Cruises before we move on, Dalton?
Yeah, just to finish on O'Neill, I didn't touch on as much, but he is the hardest hit ball in StatCast history. You look at his career numbers compared to Ellie, very similar except the stolen bases. So he's just a reasonable facsimile to De La Cruz only three rounds later in fantasy. So why not draft both those, what I say? I mean, I like both these guys' upside.
Yeah, no, it's I cannot wait to, and again, with them being in the same division, you know, they are going to be compared and we'll be seeing them play against each other quite often. All right, our last exercise we're going to do with you, Dalton, is we are going to take a look at the Yahoo Fantasy rankings. Again, just the basic, again, I know there's different rankings for different categories and different, you know, formats and whatnot, but we have the list of, I guess, I mean, this goes to almost 400 names, and we wanted to highlight some guys that were a little bit farther down. I'm just going to pick a couple guys that, in a fantasy context or even in Jake and I's context, just thinking like, oh, that's someone that we are not talking about enough. So we're going to focus on guys outside the top 100, and we are just going to each pick a couple here. So we'll each pick one between the 100 and 200 range, and then we'll each pick one beyond the 200 range. So I will start in case you guys are not entirely sure of who you're going to pick, although I'm sure there are so many names. Again, at this time of year, especially at this time of year when we're so excited to watch so many of these players, it becomes hard to just pick one. But I am going to start us off with a good friend of ours, Jake Mintz, and that is Rhys Hoskins. And the reason why I'm going to bring up Rhys Hoskins is because what made Rhys so special beforehand was you knew exactly what you were getting. He essentially replicated the same season four or five times, of course, before he missed all of last year. And while he did just miss a whole year, and there are questions involved with that, I am just so confident that he is going to return, especially in a ballpark in Milwaukee, hitting in the middle of that lineup. I am, even with some of the weird moves the Brewers have had this winter, I'm just so confident that he is going to return, even with maybe a lower batting average. I just think he's going to be awesome again. I think he's going to hit 30 homers. I think he's going to have almost 100 RBIs. I think he's going to be exactly as productive as we all expect, because Rhys has always been the same thing. So obviously we're biased because he's one of our favorite people, but I really do think he's going to have an awesome season. So that's the first one for me. And I'll kick it to you, Dalton, for another one.
Like the Hoskins pick, a nice boring veteran pick. I want to go Wyatt Langford, but he's just so obvious. He's going crazy, killing spring training. So yes, he's flying up draft boards, rightfully so. But I'm cheating a little outside the 200, but a little deeper. I love Nick Lodolo so much. And this leg injury, yes, it's a concern that he's still feeling it after the offseason, but he's completing his bullpen sessions, and don't let him be a week or two behind the regular season scare you off. Or his 6.2 ERA last season that came with a 3.46 Sierra. I know he pitches in a bad ballpark for pitchers, but man, his home run for fly ball rate was incredibly high, 27% last season. No pitcher qualified had more than 20% of the last 2 years. His BABIP was 435, 100 points higher than the next highest mark, and 100 points higher than his expected BABIP. Lodolo would have ranked top five in K-minus walk percentage and CSW had he qualified. I love him, and I think he has ace upside available apparently outside the top 200 picks in the Yahoo.
Let me just jump in before I send it to Jake. I love Lodolo. He's one of my favorite people I've gotten to know in Cincinnati over the last couple of years. I am more worried about the injury timeline just because of how many setbacks he's had, and that has extended into the spring.
I get it.
So in that sense, I'm concerned. From a talent standpoint, totally with you. And I do think that if he can come back healthy, we will remember pretty quickly how good he is. So great shout out there. Jake, go ahead.
Chaz McCormick is my
pick. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Chaz McCormick, I believe he's ranked 171 on the list. He's going to play more this year than he did last year. A big reason he did not end up with more plate appearances is, frankly, Dusty Baker did not like him, and so he did not play him. Dusty is no longer the manager of the Houston Astros, and I expect McCormick to be an everyday player for Houston. Last year, in only 115 games, he hit 22 homers and stole 19 bases.
Yeah.
Like, that's I think that's a great shout out. An underrated guy who I expect to see his playing time tick up. I think that, like, there's not a ceiling there, right? Like, he kind of is what he is. But I really like Chaz McCormick as a player, and I think he's a little bit underrated.
I think that's a great call out. I would just add to that, like, it's really interesting how their outfield's kind of shaking out. They seem committed to Jake Meyers, even though he really can't hit, but he can certainly defend. But if Meyers' bat, like, totally plummets, you could, like, Chaz can play center too, you know?
Yeah.
So you could see a situation where he's going to get playing time if they want to, you know, get Yordan out in the outfield or for whatever reason again. So that's a fun one. Any thoughts on Chaz before you give us another one, Dalton?
Yeah, I like it. Like you said, almost went 20-20 in minimal at bats last year. Really like that pick. Nice lineup to be hitting in, no matter if, even if he's toward the bottom.
Yeah, I'm going to go on the wraparound. I'm going to scroll all the way down. Okay. And I'm going to take number 385, Austin Wells, catcher for the New York Yankees. Because Austin Wells, I believe, is going to start the year in a kind of a timeshare with Jose Trevino. Mm-hmm. However, I think here's what's going to happen, okay? Giancarlo Stanton is going to miss some time. Call me nuts. That's probably going to happen. And I think Wells will get some of those DH at-bats if Stanton loses time. He's going to be qualified a catcher. I love his bat. I think as the year goes on and he gets more comfortable behind the dish, he's going to take more of the playing time away from Trevino. And I think, like, when I look at Austin Wells and I look at some of the catchers above him on this list, like, I think the potential for Wells, like, especially maybe in a keeper league, is enormous. Like, I'm very in. It's a lineup that's going to get on base a lot. Like, if he's hitting fifth behind Soto and Judge, like, he's going to drive in a lot of runs.
That's a great call. I'm high on Wells as well. And it's true. I think Trevino's maybe dealing with a bit of an injury.
And that's the other thing, right? Like, every catcher gets hurt all the time. And, like, maybe that's a reason not to take Wells. But, like, Trevino had an injury issue last season. And if he goes down, like, Austin Wells is going to be the starting catcher for the New York Yankees.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Higgy's gone. Believe it or not, Kyle Gashioka somehow not on the Yankees anymore. All right. That's a good one. All right. Let's go. If you have any thoughts on Wells, go ahead, Dalton. And then I want to hear your second one.
Oh, I like it. Especially if you're playing in deeper two catcher leagues. Wells,
those two catcher leagues.
His projections are pretty nice, actually. First round pick. I like that call. Mm-hmm. All right. I mentioned Brenton Doyle earlier. This is another deep one, like 350-ish range, maybe even later. He strikes out a lot, but he plays really good defense, should keep him in Colorado's lineup. He combined for 32 homers and steals and fewer than 400 at-bats last year while playing terribly. So, I mean, he hits 168. He somehow hit 168 in Coors Field.
Yeah.
He had a 222 BABIP in Coors Field. I mean, that stadium is a spacious outfield. It helps your hit rate more than any park. A 19 WRC plus at home. So if he can just become moderately closer to league average hitter, we could be cooking with gas in fantasy here. 99th percentile sprint speed, put on 20 pounds of muscle during the offseason. Rockies don't, you know, maybe Bouchard. Well, maybe they don't really have any other options there with his defense. So I like Doyle as a real deep sleeper. And then one more for pitcher, really deep. Ricky Tiedemann. I'm falling for the hype in the spring training.
Okay.
I got a better reaction than Doyle from you guys there. Tiedemann, man, is everyone's jealous of his stuff. I understand the injury risk there, and he may not start the season in Toronto, or he probably won't. But this guy will be the most popular waiver wire pickup all year when he eventually gets the call. He's going to immediately be one of the best left-handed arms in baseball. Love the K upside. Let's go, Tiedemann.
So the difference in reaction is is that we have watched a lot of Brenton Doyle hitting.
Yeah, and he's not good at baseball. He's not good at baseball.
But it's he's very good at the thing that he's very good at. But, like, I am not tuning in to watch Brenton Doyle take ABs. However, like, whenever Ricky Tiedemann gets called up, like, I'm gonna tune in for that.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
No, that's fair. I mean, Doyle's such an extreme, again, a great example. Like, fascinating just baseball experiment, which you could extend to most things related to the Rockies, which is like how good do you have to be on defense to be able to be one of the worst hitters we've seen in Major League Baseball in the last that amount of time. And we're learning. Great. We're finding out. We are learning that. So that's a great shout out. And I totally agree, Ricky Tiedemann. And it's one of those things where, like, if Toronto didn't have all that starting pitching depth, you know, he'd already be almost certainly breaking camp on a lot of teams. So that is a great call. I'm going to finish with another pitcher. This is kind of along the lines of Nick Lodolo, but I'm just seeing how far down he is. And I just am pretty sure he's healthy and he looked really good yesterday. And that's Tristan McKenzie. I mean, when he was pitching, you know, he was hurt. He only made a couple starts last year, but he was one of the most productive starting pitchers in baseball in 2022. And that's the last we saw of him. So I understand being concerned that he's going to suddenly be back at 190 innings. That's fair. But if he's healthy, I just think he's one of the best pitchers in the American League. And he's down here in the 200s. So I totally understand the skepticism, because when you have an injury, that's, you know, when you miss that much time, it's a little bit scary. But honestly, and even in fantasy context, and maybe this is disrespectful, but like, I'm seeing Bieber 100 spots higher on here. And I know he's had a really promising spring and maybe throwing higher, but I don't see why McKenzie shouldn't be that much farther down than him. Like, I view both of those guys, if they're healthy, as clear, you know, top 30 starting pitchers.
It's a great call out. I think the reluctance here is just we hadn't seen him throw so timely. So he looked good and we finally seen him in spring throw. Now this guy should absolutely be moving up draft boards. That was the concern.
Yep.
You know, I haven't really seen it happen yet. So how is he sit after the offseason? But love his skills and the pitcher he was a couple years ago. This is one of the best bargains you can have right now if his ADP stays
easily.
There.
Great call. Again, similar with Seattle, a lot of guys to choose from, right? I'm very high on Gavin Williams. I believe in Logan Allen. Bybee obviously has so much of the hype. So all of those guys are very exciting with Cleveland. So Dalton, thanks for indulging us. Thanks for defending your opinions here very well, very, very eloquently. Even if we don't see eye to eye on Brenton Doyle, I think we can look past it and continue to be friends here as part of the Young family.
It's no fun to agree on everything, but thanks for having me, guys. Hope you have me back. And remember to sign up for Yahoo Fantasy Baseball. We have a million articles out and all the rankings updated every day. So yeah, give us a sign up. And thanks for having me, guys.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
I want to talk some Tyler Glass now, next time, though, after your interview. I'm going to quiz you more on Glass now. I saw your interview, but
don't worry, we'll
save that till next time. Dude's winning the Cy Young this year.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I thought I was the most optimistic on Glass now, but I'm glad you've completely beat me in that category. But thank you so much, Dalton. Again, make sure you sign up for Yahoo Fantasy Baseball. Opening day is coming up. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back here on Baseball Barbacast. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Thank you to Dalton for joining us, doing some fantasy baseball chatter. You know, Jake and I talked about this, and we are, I think, going to try and put together a league, a Baseball Barbacast league. Details TBD, of course, on Yahoo Sports Fantasy. But if we can agree on a date before opening day that everyone can go, let us know. If there's interest in this, let us know, and we would find a way to randomly select people to join us for what would probably be a 10 or 12 team roto league. I think we could have a good time. Jake retired from fantasy baseball a long time ago, but I think this would be a good cause to get him out of retirement. I think this could be fun.
Speaking of retirement, are you aware that Rich Hill is helping broadcast Red Sox games on the radio?
I saw that and I was like, okay, but he didn't say he was done, right?
I know.
Now, again, this is back to some of the other guys looking for getting jobs. Like, Joey Votto is not. I mean, he's doing a lot of interviews right now. Bless his heart.
Come on the pod, Joey.
But I don't know if he's gonna show up in the Reds booth. Yeah. They've basically already offered him that, I'm sure, 100 times. So,
dude, can you imagine Rich Hill on the Red Sox broadcast? Like, well, you know, I'll tell you, the pitching is looking pretty thin for Boston. They could really use a veteran presence in the rotation,
like
a lefty, like a slow throwing lefty from the area, maybe.
It's a great move because he's just going to be like down. If he's around them enough, at some point they're just going to be like, Rich is already here.
Fine.
Just put on some baseball pants, dude. All right, go out there.
Rich Hill. Someone's going to be like this.
Innings.
Rich Hill is here.
he is. Although, obviously, for our purposes, if Rich Hill's going to come back, he needs to be with a new team. All right. Edwin Jackson, he can tie Edwin Jackson for most franchises played for if he gets to find a new team, and the Red Sox does not accomplish that. All right, Jake, one final topic today.
I'm a little hungry.
Are you? Ah, okay, but not hungry for what we're about to talk about. That's for sure. We had a little bit of reporting. This was a story on MLB.com from Bill Ladson. He's been a baseball writer for a long time, of course. This is a story about Jazz Chisholm Jr. The headline reads, "Entering year two in center field, Chisholm's confidence is sky high." And we have this excerpt. Yep.
Let me just hop in right there. Jazz has had some issues during his career staying healthy. One of his issues has not ever really been confidence. Just want to be clear. The idea of Jazz's confidence is now sky high. We love Jazz. We've kicked it with him in the Bahamas. Okay. Yes. Multiple times. Like,
we are always rooting for Jazz.
We are always rooting for Jazz. The idea of like, oh, watch out. Jazz has self-confidence.
Finally. Now. About time. Okay. Anyway, this is the excerpt that made the rounds on Twitter yesterday. This is an excerpt from the story. This is how serious Chisholm is about not... So again, basically, he was injured a lot last year. Now, some of that, he, you know, some of it was an injured, you know, oblique strain. Some of it was he bashed his toe into the center field wall, which is, again, it's been a combination of fluky stuff and, you know, soft tissue stuff, whatever. Okay. Here we go. Excerpt from the story. This is how serious Chisholm is about not spending a day on the injured list.
How serious, Jordan? How serious?
: His daily McDonald's trips are over.
Over.
He hired a chef, and it's about eating right. He even has a personal physical therapist. According to Schumacher, Chisholm spent part of his offseason with former big leaguer Matt Holliday and talked about the art of hitting. First of all,
so that's let's actually start with that.
I kind of love that detail.
Skip and Matt Holliday are like best friends. Skip was at Jackson's wedding. I am very skeptical that Jazz went to Oklahoma.
Guess what? You're wrong. Because I'm looking in this story, and the video that is put in this story is literally Jazz in Oklahoma.
You know what?
Somehow none of us ever heard about this. Like,
I'm in. Yeah. I'm buying the Jazz breakout. This is the year. He went to Stillwater, Oklahoma in the winter. Okay, this is a guy from the Bahamas. He lives in the Bahamas in Miami. And he wants it bad enough that he opted in to a winter journey to Stillwater, Oklahoma. Jazz is playing 170 games this year.
So there you go. But again, this quote from Jazz again. "This is the first year I actually put in my off-the-field efforts. This is the year for me to be healthy and doing all that stuff. A healthy Jazz is an MVP Jazz."
Correct.
I love Jazz. "If I play the games, it would be 30-something home runs. I just don't play the games. This year, I want to play healthy." You know, admitting is the first step, right?
True.
This is the first time that Jazz has also recognized, okay, you know what? I have missed time. I have not been healthy. And so this is great. I love this. We are rooting for him. And by the way, like, Jazz moving to center field was one of the most fascinating stories of the season anyway. And we were kind of robbed of that. Of even just learning what that was going to be like and how it would impact the Marlins. I know they ended up going to the postseason anyway, but it is still a gigantic X factor, like in terms of star level talent and someone that can dramatically change the complexion of their team.
Yeah.
He is still that. He is absolutely still that.
Jazz is such an interesting character in baseball. I think he has received a lot of scorn from inside baseball. Some of that is because he's young and black and brash and confident. And he does not deserve scorn for that, obviously. And then some of that is because he, at times, all that other stuff aside, lacks the feel and, you know, perspective necessary to succeed at the big league level. As he literally just admitted in the quote that you said, "This is the first offseason that I've been..." Like, that's not a... It's a good thing that he's figured that out. It's a bad thing that he's figuring...
It tells us too, like, oh, there was maybe some shortcomings here beforehand, right? Whether it is the diet, whether it is just how he's spending his offseason, and it's fine. You're not going to hear us being like, these guys need to spend every waking hour in the gym during the offseason. Obviously, we don't actually care about that. But when you consider what it takes to be a successful major leaguer, and we've talked to enough guys, and like, some of it is eyewash, sure, some of it is real. And for him to admit that and realize, oh, I am not achieving a standard that is going to keep me a successful big leaguer, credit to him.
Jazz Chisholm can do things and can be something that nobody else, that very few other players in the game can be and do. And he owes it to himself to give himself the best opportunity to reach his full potential. Now, we, the people who want to watch Jazz Chisholm become 100% of Jazz Chisholm, we are selfish in that we want to watch it. You know, I want to know what fully deployed, like unmesswithable Jazz Chisholm is, like for 162 games. I want that selfishly. Yeah. And so I'm glad he's turned the corner. Quickly, McDonald's every day. I don't think he ate McDonald's 162 times before. I guess he didn't play in 162 games. But
like, whatever. Let's say he was even on a 9-to-5 work schedule. Was he having McDonald's five times a week? Think about it that way.
Was he averaging McDonald's five times a week? If yes, that's too much. That's too many times to also be an athlete. People have pointed out that that's what Chad Ochocinco did. Kind of a different thing for a lot of reasons. Chad Ochocinco, what? He played 16 times a year?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't comment on the exact nature. Again, like to me, though, like him... For Bill Anson to refer to this as daily McDonald's trips, like that's not an accident. Like if it had said his routine McDonald's trips, I wouldn't
regular
have even
McDonald's
regular
trips.
Like I would not have. I would have been like, oh wow, like he was eating a lot of McDonald's and he's a professional athlete, whatever. But to write daily like tells me that either Jazz insinuated that it was that frequently. That's what's hard for me to fathom. But like, listen, as the fast food enthusiast on the show, I'm not going to shame it. But it's again, it's the context, right? Is that putting your body in the best place to physically succeed?
If you went to McDonald's every day, I would have no problem with that. That's your life. That's your choice. You can do what you want. You're not a professional athlete. You're not even an amateur athlete.
No.
Okay.
No.
But like, there's a reason that professional nutritionists are not telling their players to go
it's
you know eight fish fillets every
it's
week.
It's that and again it's once you're in the major leagues, you know, like these are, by the way, this was like a real issues in the minors for a long time because they weren't paid anything and there was no actual support and guys had to because they had no choice, and that was why it's like, well, this is ridiculous. Teams were like, why are we allowing our players to eat like garbage all the time? Because it's like, oh yeah, I guess we should spend the couple million dollars to basically feed our entire system over the course of a season. This is a no-brainer. But for Jazz, as he's now, you know, settling into a major league career, he's like, oh yeah, I have the resources here. Let's change something about that. So
credit to goals him, for Jazz. Goals for Jazz this year, 140 games played, and nobody at the local McDonald's knows his order by heart. Speaking of hearts.
Wow. Unbelievable transition. We have one final real topic, and that is to introduce our new producer. Our permanent producer, our everyday producer. I trust this guy to show up a lot more than Jazz playing 162.
Oh,
bless
man.
His heart. And that is Andrew Hartz. Andrew, welcome to Baseball Barbercast, our new producer. Hello, sir. How are you?
Fellas, I'm doing good. I appreciate the warm invite, the warm welcome. And I'll not doing the McDonald thing on the daily, so you can expect me to be here, you know, Monday, Wednesday, Friday for the both of you. Yeah.
Good. No soft tissue injuries. Hearts. Jordan, in the past, we've had producer Bobby. We had producer Chris. I propose that we call him Hearts the Producer instead of producer Andrew or producer Hearts. Hearts, how do you feel about Hearts the Producer? Like Cedric
like
the
it.
Entertainer.
Yeah, no, I like it. It's a very enforcing will, which means I have no enforcement over you guys at all. So let's do it. It gives me like a Phantom of the Opera vibe a little bit. So I like it.
Yeah, it's kind of it is more of a regal title. We should say, I know, you know, producer Chris, who of course we miss dearly. I had some history with producer Chris as I was, you know, we lived together in New York. We also, this is not the first time we are speaking, Mr. Hartz. We have worked together before. When we all worked over at Big Baseball at MLB.com.
Big Ball.
Back when we literally first began, when we first got hired in 2017. Andrew Hartz was one of the first producers we worked with when we were doing some in-studio stuff. And I guess that's a good question to kind of end on here. First of all, it's just funny. Here we are reunited on this podcast, which is great. Of course, we've already reflected on that off the air. But is anything different about us since you first met us? What do you have any reflections on that?
Everything, dude.
or are we the same? Like, have we grown up at all? What do you think?
I will tell you, the one thing about you guys is that you're truly authentic to how you were back then to how you are now. Maybe, you know, some of your the reporting you do is a little different. But with that said, though, you guys are still pretty much the same. I will say that back then you guys were great to work with. And I know even now, more so, you guys are going to be even more fun and awesome to be with. So not too much. You guys have stayed the same, so which is good. I like consistency.
Now, good. Yeah, we're just big boys now. The one question I have is, we mentioned this at the open, you are a Yankees fan. And correct. I think that is a very interesting energy that we're going to be able to tap into here on the show. I don't think, like, I think being a Yankees hater is not, like, the correct way to describe Jordan and I. I think it's more that, like, we are just genuinely both disinterested and eye-rolly at the Yankees kind of sense of superiority, while also acknowledging, like, you do have 27 rings, and that's pretty cool. What type of Yankees fan are you? What are things about Yankee world do you believe? Have you ever booed someone at a game? Like, are you a reply guy? Like, where do you fall on the Yankees fandom spectrum?
I will say, and I think that both of you can kind of relate to this in a little bit, where back in the day before working for Big Ball, I was very much a yelling at players, booing guys. I was a big boo A-Rod guy. Fully admit that. But since working for Big Ball,
I'm a big boo A-Rod guy right now.
Even still, good for you. Listen, consistency, like I mentioned, you guys stay consistent.
I go to Timberwolves games and I boo A-Rod.
That's dedication. That is true dedication. No, I've become one of those fans where I'm not, you know, going to rub 27 rings in your face. I'm not going to do that. If I have to, I will. Don't worry. Like, you poke the bear enough, the bear will come out. But I'm one of those, you know, I've been humbled. And I think any Yankee fan since 2009 has been humbled.
Good.
Especially after last year. So you don't have to worry about, you know, Snell, Montgomery, you know, everybody. I want the world. I want this. I want that. So I'm a very realistic Yankee fan, but I'm not going to be overly passionate. Yeah, we'll see.
Okay, yeah, so the sense I'm getting is you called Carl Pavano a bum.
Oh, yeah.
But you wouldn't call Carlos Rodon a bum.
Correct. Yes. Accurate.
That's just like where we're at. Okay. That's good to know. That's very helpful.
Yeah. Okay. Let's the humbling has ensued. Once he gets out of fourth place, we'll see what happens. Yes. But you know that this will be a storyline all year long. And I'm glad to have you a part of our regular producer.
So, just quick Yankees related story there. So, you know, I coached Little League Hearts and, this was last year, or two years ago. This is the fall of 22. The Yankees were in the postseason again, and one of my Little League kids, like 10 or 11, comes to practice wearing like a Luke Voit jersey, which is hilarious because he wasn't even on the team anymore. And I'm like, oh, Yankees fan, like, excited, you know, big game against the Guardians or whatever. And the kid's like, oh, they're just going to blow it like they always do. And I was like, right, you're 10. In 2022, you have never seen them succeed. And it just really sunk into me. Like, this kid is like, the Yankees always throwing it away.
We've essentially swapped places with the Red Sox, which is very humbling. Yeah.
Yeah. Think about it like this. A Cubs fan who died in 1908 was like, dynasty, baby. It's like, these guys always get the job done.
So we'll see. We'll see. I mean, I've made the point that the 27 rings, you know, jeer gets more depressing every year because it's like, why do you still have 27? What's going on there? You've been saying 27 for a long time.
Bump those numbers up.
Anyway, okay. All right. Listen,
those are rookie numbers.
We got all season to make these jokes. Andrew Hartz, it's great to have you as our producer. Shouts out to Brett Rader, who, of course, produced the first couple episodes of the show and will continue to be a strong presence in guiding this ship moving forward. You can email us at baseballbarbcast@gmail.com. Everyone have a wonderful weekend. Our division previews start next week. AL East, baby. We're going to get some more Yankee chatter in on Monday, as well as some other fun stuff planned for next week. So stay tuned. Looking forward to all that. Jake, final word on this episode.
For those of you watching on YouTube, yes, I am literally in my parents' basement.